from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the fourth day of September 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Labor Department has proposed a new rule that would boost wages and increase safeguards for seasonal farm workers. And the Meat Export Federation survey shows nearly two-thirds of the consumers surveyed in China are scared to eat pork for fear of getting H1N1. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then I'll tell you why our listeners in the southern part of the growing region should check late-planted and double-cropped beans for aphids. Hey, the Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media and comes to you from the University of Illinois on the Urbana-Champaign campus.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. In the nearby soft red winter wheat, a final price on the afternoon of $4.44, down 7 1/4. December at 471 3/4, down 7. And the March soft red at 491 1/2, down 7 as well. Kansas City hard red at $4.77, 6 3/4 lower. From the corn pit back down in Chicago, $3.50. The final price for the September futures, 10 1/2 lower on the lead option. December at 306 1/4, the harvest month down 9 1/2, and the March at 319 3/4, down 9 1/4. May futures 329 1/4, 9 cents lower. July at 337 3/4, down 8 3/4. September soybean futures $9.61 a settlement price, down 21 cents. November at 922, 19 1/2 lower. And January at $9.27, down 18 1/2. The March at 927 3/4, down 18 1/2. And May contract at 926 3/4, down 17 1/4 cents. A September soybean meal futures at 332.20. That's up $9.80. Really the only green on the grains floor. Meal in the October contract settled $5 lower at 287.20 for the afternoon. September oil at 33.65, down 43 cents. October live cattle futures 7 1/2 lower at 86.65. September feeders at 98.95, 45 higher, and the October lean hogs at $50.50, up 72 1/2 cents. You are, of course, listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $68.02 a barrel, just about 6 cents higher at this time. October ethanol at $1.54 4 cents on a settlement price, down 2 1/2 cents. Natural gas at $2.72 9 cents, 22 1/10 cents higher. And the RBOB at $1.77 4 cents, that's 1 8 cents lower. That's kind of the rack mount price for your unleaded gasoline you'd get at any old gas station. Heating oil now, diesel fuel, $1.72, unchanged, down 1 4/10 cents. And propane futures at 94 7/10, just about 8 1/10 cents higher. Gold futures at $994.90, the settlement price down 90 cents an ounce. And the Dow at 9,431 is currently trading just about 87 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 78.13. is down 0.32 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 247.58 is 1.16 lower for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says in the north and central sections should be clear to partly cloudy. In the south, mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers. Lows generally will range from 50 in northwestern Indiana to 60 in the far south, with lows in the 60s in some city centers. Tomorrow in the north and central sections, mostly sunny. In the south, a mix of clouds, hazy sunshine, a few scattered showers, some isolated thunderstorms. Tomorrow's high around 76 near Lake Michigan and 83 in the deep south. Scattered showers and thunderstorms, says Ed, will be possible in southern portions of Illinois and Indiana again on Sunday. Some may work northward into central sections. Scattered showers and thunderstorms possible throughout the two-state on Monday as well. And scattered showers will continue on a periodic basis all week next week. Temperatures will hover close to average for the coming week. You are listening, of course, to WILL AM 580.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. On this Friday afternoon, Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics joins us to take a look at what happened in what's been a pretty dismal week in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Very dismal indeed, Todd. Good afternoon to you.
And well, good afternoon. And first up, thank you very much for making your way over to the Farm Progress Show for our panel of analysts at the AgriGold tent earlier in the week. I hope you had a good time and you met a lot of wonderful farmers and their relatives.
I did. In fact, one guy from Michigan, one guy from Missouri, and many, many guys from Illinois and Indiana all gave you compliments. You and Dave and the internet as much as the radio. So it was really nice to hear people are still enjoying and new people are tuning in every day, it sounds like.
Well, let's give them something to talk about then. So as we took out through this week, a whole lot of strength in the bean market. We dropped soybeans $1.74¾ in the nearby September contract, 89 cents lower. These, of course, are weekly from Friday to Friday trades, down 89 in that November at $9.22. Corn futures were off 20¼ in the nearby September. They settled at $3.25. And December 306, down 22¾. I guess the only good news is that there wasn't a 2 in front of the corn when we finished off the week. How did you make the trade?
Well, I think today was the swing day for where the trade sits. I mean, we had been talking last week and the prior week about weather and the outside markets. And when we took weather out of the mix today at lunchtime and we brought the outside markets into the mix in terms of being supportive, first they started out weaker, Todd, and then they came back around mid-session and became supportive with new daily lows in the dollar, and the crude oil turned positive. The stocks made new daily highs as well in terms of the S&P 500. Very encouraging, and we saw the November beans jump back up to 930. That was only 10 cents off the highs for the day trade session. We saw the corn get back to around the 311, 312 level, and it looked pretty encouraging. But I think today showed us that the trade has a lot more in it than the outside markets, and I think it goes back to when I talked to Chicago after the close, and we were talking back and forth about how the trade took that next leg lower. What other than weather could have done that? And the guys at EFG said pretty bluntly, no one was expecting, in their book anyway, very few people were expecting, as big a supply numbers as we have been getting from people like FC Stone, from Informa, from the Lynn Group. Today was the most notable and most recent one we got hit with. And I think it's safe to say now that even with the outside markets being supportive and going into this long weekend, the trade is getting more and more bearish in terms of the supply that the USDA may throw on us on Friday of next week. And I would suspect that we are now trading close to a 2 billion bushel carryover for 09 corn because we are dancing on that 2 handle now in lead month corn futures. I would think that we're probably trading in upwards of a 290 to maybe even over a 300 million bushel carryover in the beans now, or a 43-plus yield, given the fact that we were able to take out that 200-day moving average for the first time since mid-July. So the outside market certainly showed me that they took a back seat, but the reason that was because the crop estimates that were coming in were bigger than the trade estimates. And when I kind of quizzed why they were bigger than the trade estimates, the reply was, and at least I inferred it this way, that the crop is so far behind, and certainly the crop in Decatur showed me that, the crop is so far behind, why would you stretch your legs out and give such large yields when you still have 3, 4, 5 weeks of maturity to go through? So I think that's really what the trade told us this week, and I don't see any real reason why they would want to switch gears going into the report unless we had a complete reversal of psychology on Tuesday's trade.
Well, why don't you go through some of those numbers? I think I saw the Allendale number come through at 13.7, but I have to confirm that. Do you have the Lynn Group's number in front of you by chance?
Yeah, in fact, they came in at 162.7, or just a little over 13 billion, and they came in at 43 bushels on the beans at 3.3 billion. I saw a lot of 3.3s in the beans this week. I think the highest number I saw on the corn was around that 13.3, 13.5 area. I didn't didn't remember seeing a 13.7, but I've been traveling too. So.
Well, I'd have to go back and look. So while we're talking, I'll see if I can find that. So I may very well have put a number in there wrong or transposed something along the way, so don't hold me to that one just yet. But despite the fact of that maybe misquote of a number, the numbers are big for corn. And I guess on Friday of next week we'll find out how big they are, but do you believe them? And if so, what do you do about it?
I just got done looking at the crop conditions and the stage that we are at in terms of dough and corn and beans dropping leaves for the last 6 years, and I just got done wrapping up the estimates that I'm going to put out to the news wires this weekend, and I'm going to come out with a 162 even yield on corn. We are pretty far behind on dough compared to 2007, which was in September of 2007. That's our biggest yield number that USDA has given us in 6 years, and that was 155.8. So if I use that as a benchmark and I look at the fact that we are 10 points ahead and good to excellent versus 07, but we're probably about 10 or 13 points behind in corn dough, it gives me the idea that we're probably looking from a jumping from a 159.5 in August to about a 162. I'm still, to answer your question more directly, is 162 on yield with the idea that we could still come in with a correction to the downside on harvested acres on corn. So if I was looking for a bullish surprise in corn, it would be that harvested acres number. In beans, I'm going to come out with a 42.3 yield, Todd, and that's going to be based upon it's very hard to get any good information out of crop conditions and beans dropping leaves at this stage. It's all over the board in the September reports of the last 6 years. And so using the yield data from the August report and then talking to clients and doing a anecdotal survey, I don't think we're at that 43-bushel yield level yet. I was talking to a good client in Pontiac or outside of Pontiac in Cabery this afternoon, and I said, I just don't feel like I can go to 43. And he said, I don't have 43-bushel beans here in terms of as good a beans as I had last year. And I think the trip to Decatur confirmed that to me. And when you talked at the post-closing report, I was driving on the way home, and you talked from farther south, and he talked about beans. And when I talked to other people from Missouri with ankle-high beans, I know the West is good, but I doubt very seriously if the USDA jumps to a 43-plus yield on the September report. So I think that's where you would find a bullish surprise in the bean.
It might be very hard to do that using the West as the support. Normally, the bean market, the bean production areas are from this area on into Indiana and Ohio, and they tend to have the better yield. So we'll see how that one plays out. I did find the Allendale number, and I transposed it. I thought maybe I did. That was a 13.127. They'll want me to make that correction.
Maybe know. They're the reason. I'm just kidding.
So it was a 13.127 billion bushel
but
crop.
But, you know, I think the bottom line is that even if the yield numbers I project are down there, I think that, you know, that's ample supplies, but I think that that's already baked into the cake at this point. Again, I think that we are dancing here going into Labor Day with no weather fear built into the price. We're dancing on 2 billion bushels in the trade in terms of price already priced in and 300 million on beans. So that's kind of, it doesn't mean I won't buy puts, and it doesn't mean I won't get defensive, and I definitely have to recommend getting out of the November bean calls if we don't jump on Tuesday and reverse thrusters here and preserve what equity we have left in those. But I think it goes back to this report is going to be pretty doggone neutral, if not friendly, especially if we get some weather to mix in next week.
Maybe you better answer one more question to me. Where is that $2 billion stored at this point? It doesn't seem likely that very much of it is in the hands of farmers. It seems unlikely that very much of it is in the hand of the elevator. So is there that much storage for the processor?
You know, you and I had talked to some of the cash merchandisers that were at the tent there at AgriGold yesterday, and I think we both deduced that what corn was being moved was already sold and was already in the marketing pipeline and in the channels. And so I think commercial-wise, I think you're right. But I do, and I did talk to, I would guess I probably talked to seven or eight guys yesterday. Their biggest question was, I've got a lot of 08 corn, and I haven't really started my 09 corn sales yet. So I do think that probably 25-30%, maybe a little more, is still on farm and 08 in the bins with the farmers. You know, and I think that nervousness was picked up at probably all your panel meetings, not just yesterday's.
Any final word before I let you go?
Well, we held the support line just barely on the crude oil. I think the outside markets are still very, very important from a standpoint of whether we can turn this ship around after Friday's report comes out. I still think that the outside markets are probably the major thing that makes the trend the next 2 or 3 months as we progress into harvest.
Thanks so much for being with us today.
Have a great weekend, Todd, and happy Labor Day.
Hey, you too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics. Comes to us from Lafayette, Indiana on a Friday afternoon.
Support for Illinois Public Media comes from Syngenta, featuring AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids, designed to give you up to 38 bushels more per acre if you have rootworms, and an average of 3 more even if you don't. More information on Syngenta's AgriSure 3000 GT hybrids is at agrisuretraits.com.
In agricultural news, the Labor Department is proposing a new rule that would boost wages and increase safeguards for thousands of seasonal workers brought in each year to help farmers pick their crops. The agency yesterday said it would also require that growers make greater efforts to fill those jobs with American workers. If the rules are adopted, they would largely reverse regulations finalized shortly before President George W. Bush left office and return to a framework that had been in place since 1987. A survey commissioned by the U.S. Meat Export Federation says nearly two-thirds of consumers in China, the world's largest pork producer and consumer, stopped eating pork in the early stages of the outbreak of H1N1 influenza, originally known as swine flu. Their survey of 1,200 Chinese consumers also shows that more than one in five still believe that eating pork can result in catching the flu virus. U.S. pork exports to China for June, the latest month available, totaled 1.861 million pounds, down from 3.161 million pounds in May, and down sharply from 69.623 million in June of 2008, when exports to China soared ahead of the Summer Olympics. Meanwhile, U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said yesterday that USDA plans to buy an additional $30 million in pork products in fiscal year 2009 for federal food and nutrition assistance programs. But traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange had expected a bigger aid package and said $30 million will do little to help the beleaguered sector because of a glut of pork in storage. Brazilian beef giant JBSSA is set to announce as soon as next week the acquisition of Texas-based Pilgrim's Pride Corporation for a price of roughly $2.5 billion. The deal would pull the second-largest chicken company in the U.S. out of bankruptcy court and shake up the global meat business. If it moves as expected, it would create a new U.S. rival to Tyson Foods Incorporated, which is the biggest U.S. meat company that produces beef, chicken, and pork. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world on University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and of Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Don't forget that there you'll find Commodity Week. And our guest this week is Gavin McGuire. He's the director of eHedger in Chicago. Panelists Sherman Newland, Dale Dirkholz, and Greg Johnson will help me ask questions of Gavin. And, of course, I'll ask questions of them. It all happens during Commodity Week. We record at 4:30 in the afternoon. It's posted to our website at willag.org at just about 6 o'clock Central Time. Now, up next, no soybean aphids have shown up in the fields throughout the Midwest. As you'll hear, there are still some reasons at this late date to treat for the insect pest, and maybe more importantly, some good reasons not to treat. Well, after a relatively quiet summer with the soybean aphid across the state of Illinois, and for that matter, much of the north central region that encompasses nearly all of the Midwest, Soybean aphid densities have begun to increase significantly in some fields. Jim Morrison, a crop systems extension educator in Rockford, Illinois, indicated that in a sentinel plot in Lee County, that's in the northern part of the state, 13 of 20 plants examined had 250 to 500 aphids on it. Both soybean varieties were at the R6 stage of plant development, that's full seed. Jim also noted the presence of lady beetle adults and larvae in the plot. Both of those things are important. Lady beetles and R6, keep them in mind. In contrast to previous years, this season's report of soybean aphids are more numerous in southern Illinois. Robert Bellum, crop systems extension educator in Edwardsville, has observed numerous soybean fields heavily infested with soybean aphids in the past week in Madison County, that near St. Jacob. Soybean fields with the worst infestations were those planted late or double-cropped. Now, because of the late planting in many areas of southern Illinois, some of the fields have not reached that R6 stage. Extension entomologist Mike Gray says if fields are less mature than R6, they may still benefit from a rescue treatment if an average of 250 aphids per plant is found. 80% of the plants are infested, aphid numbers are on the increase, and few predators are observed. That's those lady beetles we talked about earlier. Keep in mind, says Gray, that actual yield loss does not typically occur unless aphid densities reach 675 aphids per plant. That's the economic injury level. Yield benefits of an insecticide treatment for soybean aphids beyond the R5 stage of plant development, he says, have proven inconsistent. Fields should continue to be scouted very thoroughly over the next several weeks, says the entomologist, and the appropriate management decision made on a field-by-field basis. You can read more on soybean aphids from U of I entomologist Mike Gray online at the IPM Bulletin. Just search Google for Illinois IPM Bulletin. This is the Closing Market Report. It's Friday, the 4th day of September, 2009. Time to check in on the agricultural cash grain markets. On the line with us from the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, is Bruce Bostard. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Well, we've been asking this question of several of our analysts. First, do you have any grain left in the elevator in the way of corn?
On corn, we do have some inventory yet.
And then I suspect that's not much.
Some, but not a lot.
If it's not with you, then where is it and what kind of problems do we have?
Scattered all over the country, and tell you, I'm getting reports from basically all over the Corn Belt of quality problems out there. We're scraping the bottom of the bins, and we're scraping them all across the Corn Belt, and a lot of what's left has some quality issues, either damage or high FM. So making specs on trains isn't the easiest thing to do right now.
I would suspect that that should mean there should be some pretty good basis for good quality corn then.
I think that we could see some early harvest, prime the pump type action out there when we get going on corn and soybeans both to try and get things running, because we're going to be delayed out here, and it'll be a wet corn, and nobody will be wanting to take the moisture discount, so it'll be interesting.
Well, that would be interesting, but it won't be all that great if we have $3 corn on the futures markets.
Not at all.
And do you think it'll come back?
Right now, the funds are in a liquidation phase. We're taking it down. This is kind of the annual, can they put it all away? Let's see who blinks first action.
And your bids for the day are?
We are at 294 on nearby corn, 1052 on soybeans.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Fridays.
It's National Macadamia Nut Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1801, Cullen Whipple was born, an American inventor and machine.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. On the line with us today from the Illinois State Water Survey, the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, it belongs to NOAA, the National Organic Atmospheric Association, is Steve Hilberg. He's the director there. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's talk about the weather, not in the short term, but longer out. We've had sort of that forecast out there just a bit in the 17th, 18th. Of potential frost in the upper Midwest. Has it changed at all?
I think that probably we're not likely to see anything too much. And that's pretty far out yet, and we're still talking almost 2 weeks. But I would say it's still an outside possibility, especially for parts of northern Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. But that being said, even last week there were some sub-freezing temperatures reported that last week of August up in those same areas. So how far south this will get is hard to say at this point, but it does look like we're in for a cold shot. But again, that's 2 weeks out, and I can change between now and then.
You're a climatologist. Let's turn the clock back around, do it the other way around. When you look at August, how did it fare as compared to normal?
Well, August was cool all the way through normal here in the Midwest and in Illinois. Temperatures in August rarely range from about 3 to 6 degrees below normal across the entire region. So it was another cool month. But in terms of July, which is in many areas a record cold month, August was up in the 20 to 25 ranking in terms of coldest August. It wasn't terribly unusual, but it was cool, and it was cool everywhere. We had really only one warm period during August, roughly about a week there between the 17th and 24th or so, where most of the Midwest was actually warmer than normal by about 3 to 5 degrees, but we can remember how it ended there, very cold. And so we're still running well behind normal on growing degree days across much of the region, and as we discussed last week, while we may not lose too much more ground, we're not going to be able to pick up a lot unless we get into a very prolonged and extended warm spell, which doesn't look very likely.
If that doesn't look likely, what does it look like we'll have in the next week?
Well, as we were talking, you were talking earlier, it does look like we're going to be, temperatures are going to be close to normal. It's actually not too far from that right now today. It's a sort of a warm day, a little more humid than it has been. But as we get further into the weekend, there will be some moisture moving up into the Midwest, and that combined with some weak upper level disturbances rotating through here will trigger some showers and thunderstorms. So I think a good part of the week will be spent not unlike today in terms of temperature, but probably see better chances for rain here and there across the state. Initially, I think the southern half of Illinois and Indiana will probably be more likely to get the rain, and generally chances throughout the week, the rest of the state as well.
Steve, thanks for being with us.
All right, Todd.
Hey, you too. That's Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here at the Illinois State Water Survey and on the U of I campus. You have a good weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Baisdefer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.